Welcome to the Freedom Report, broadcasting from Alexandria, Virginia. Welcome to the Freedom Report. I'm your host, Austin Peterson. Who's Austin Peterson?
Liberty champion Austin Peterson, this Justin Bieber lookalike, and a powerful advocate for liberty.
Who's Austin Peterson? I'm an American. I love life, liberty, and family, but I'm not a conservative. I'm a hardcore libertarian. What am I doing here? I'm trying to restore the republic. The Libertarian Republic is a website aimed at furthering the ideas of economic freedom and personal liberty. I don't really care about parties. All I care about are ideas. And the one idea I care the most about? Freedom! That's right, pure freedom on the Freedom Report podcast.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the Freedom Report podcast. I'm your host, Austin Peterson. And today is the day after the midterm elections. And I wanted to do a quick show because I haven't done one since last week and because there was so much chatter on the internet about the midterm elections. And a lot of people want to know, what does this mean for liberty? If you haven't been following the election results, there were a lot of things that were not only people who were up for office, but there were ballot initiatives across the country of varying degrees with relevance to libertarian questions, whether or not to legalize marijuana, whether or not to either ban the sale or creation of GMOs, GMO crops, and also the issue of whether or not to label these GMOs. And libertarians are pretty split on that issue from what I have seen. I have my own viewpoints and opinions, which I will discuss a little bit later in this. But first, let's talk about right off the top what this election meant. It's widely seen as a referendum on President Obama. President Obama lost his mandate to govern as his party ceded control of the Senate. And, you know, a lot of people think that the Democrats are the biggest losers. However, it is theoretically possible they could regain the Senate in 2016. Now, they definitely had a terrible night, but Republicans are not going to be able to rest on their laurels here and say this is some sort of a tidal wave and expect it to last. This isn't some total surge. This is more like a big wave that could crash and then end on the beach. So, Republicans are going to have to keep their wits about them in order to make sure that the Democratic agenda is pushed off. Everybody's kind of looking at what Obama is going to do, what his reaction is going to be to this. If you remember former President Bill Clinton, when his party got trounced in the midterms, Bill Clinton did an about-face and changed his attitude about a lot of things. He enacted sweeping welfare reforms, and he was widely seen as sort of placating Republicans and going towards the middle. He responded to the electorate. He responded to the midterm election results. And I think there's a lot more uncertainty about what President Obama is going to do because he is more of an ideologue, it seems, than Bill Clinton was. And much less likable than Bill Clinton was overall. President Obama, the lowest approval ratings I think any president in history has ever had. And so the grand loss, the sweeping loss in the elections yesterday is widely seen as because of the unpopularity of President Obama and his domestic agenda mostly, but also because of his foreign policy. Now people say, oh, you know, and this isn't me as a libertarian speaking, this is just me as a commentator. People are saying, you know, oh, well, he didn't step up with ISIS. And he hasn't, and when he had the chance to intervene in Syria, he backed away. That was seen as a pivot. You know, Andrew Sullivan over at The Dish, he was talking about how it was widely seen as a mistake for Obama to pull away from Syria in such a manner. He did an about-face. But if you remember what happened, there was a large Democratic outcry against intervention in Syria at that point in time. This is before the rise of ISIS. But President Obama is just seen as a weak president, and now he's looking to be a lame duck. And so, I'm reading all the comments on my Facebook pages this morning and seeing what everybody says, and libertarians seem pretty butthurt. I know, meet the new boss, same as the old boss. There's not a lot to celebrate when Republicans take power if they don't enact libertarian measures. However, I think that there is reason to be cautiously optimistic on this, and I have my criticisms of Republicans, certainly I do, and I will air some of those criticisms. By the way, if you haven't heard, I'll be on John Stossel's show tomorrow night, Thursday, November the 6th. I think that's 9 p.m. Eastern, so check your local listings, 7 p.m. or 8 p.m. Central, and you will see me actually respond to U.S. Senator Mike Lee, and you know he's obviously going to say, well, Republicans taking over, this is so great, and we're going to do all this, and we're going to do that, and don't worry, Leif Bieberson, ladies and gentlemen, your Liberty champion, will make sure that I keep the fire to the feet. if, as they say, for the Republicans and a lot of their the problems with the Republicans being in control. However, the best part about this, and this is what is going to be my main point tomorrow night on TV, is going to be that this means divided government. That's what is so exciting about this. And listen to this. I'm going to give you a sneak preview. If you're going to watch me on TV, you'll hear this again. But if you're a listener, then I'll just go ahead and tell you what I'm looking to talk about. So when one party controls the political branches, the growth of real per capita government spending is 3.4%. So we're talking about growth of government here. Now, under divided government, the rate is 1.5%. Now, it doesn't matter whether Democrats or Republicans are in sole charge. You know, 3.3% growth under Democrats versus 3.6% under Republicans. But the most libertarian combination seems to be a Democratic president with a Republican Congress where the average rate of government growth is 0.4%. Hear that? Let me say that again. The most libertarian combination seems to be a Democratic president with a Republican Congress where the average rate of government growth is 0.4%. Now, ladies and gentlemen, what that means is that now we should see a major reduction in the growth of the government, a reduction in the speed of growth, to be totally specific on this one. And that's good for liberty if you're trying to put the brakes on. Now, a lot of people, pundits in the mainstream media, and a lot of really stupid people are saying, voters are tired with a gridlock in Washington. Whoa, they're tired with all the gridlock. They wanted to send a message. It's time to get things done. That could not be further from the truth, ladies and gentlemen. When you hear somebody say that this election was a referendum on the gridlock in D.C., slap them across the face. Well, actually, don't initiate force. But ideologically or metaphorically slap them across the face. They don't know what the hell they're talking about. Because what the voters did was they sent a message saying more gridlock, slow the president down, throw speed bumps in his path. And some of the more, you know, hateful people this morning were kind of like, oh, this is only a speed bump because the Republicans are going to grow government too. I know, ladies and gentlemen. However, let's take a look at some of the good things that happened. We legalized weed in Oregon. Wow, that's good news. You know, we've got an ever-encroaching anti-drug war movement going on across the country. And Washington, D.C. legalized marijuana totally. I mean, recreational weed is now legal in D.C. according to the vote that happened yesterday. But here's the thing, and this is what's really interesting about this. Now, everybody knows Washington, D.C. is controlled by the feds, and marijuana is illegal federally. But since the people voted for the legalized weed, it's going to set up a sort of a struggle in Congress, who controls Washington, D.C., to see whether or not they're going to actually relax the laws against it. Now, here's the thing. Guess who oversees the budget? I believe Senator Rand Paul oversees the budget for Washington, D.C. And so what that means is that the most legalization-friendly Republican senator is the guy who pulls the purse strings here in D.C., so it's possible Rand Paul could have a major impact, on the outcome of what happens with this legalization issue in Washington, D.C. It's going to take some time to suss it out, to see what happens, but, you know, this is actually going to be a good bellwether for libertarians, because I know a lot of libertarians are very critical of Senator Paul, and so I think that this is going to be an issue where they can kind of see, is he really the Trojan horse that many of us have stated that he is? Certainly I believe he is. And I think that this issue on the ballot in Washington, D.C. is really going to put the fire to the feet, again, to Senator Rand Paul, to see if he lives up to his promises, to see if he actually is that Trojan horse. And if he pushes it off, or if he ignores it, or if he takes the wrong side on the legalization issue, well, then I think that we've got a problem here, ladies and gentlemen, because the most Tea Party-friendly, libertarian-friendly potential 2016 presidential candidate might be not on our side on these things. So there's reason to be skeptical, but I don't think there's any reason to be hateful. And I see a lot of hatefulness this morning. Libertarians are pretty hateful. Maybe it's just the comments on Facebook. I shouldn't be reading the comments on Facebook. You know what's funny is that smart people like stupid people comment, you know, because the stupid people always got to get their opinions out there, and they want to, they got to blab their mouth off because they think, you know, people actually care what they have to say, and they don't. They don't. If you're a butthurt, angry, mean, hateful person, you know, you're alienating people, and just know that nobody cares what you think, because you'll get 300 comments on something, right? And you'll be like, oh my god, so many haters. But then you'll get like thousands of likes, and you're like, oh, they all hate me. Well, yeah, because you read all the vitriol from the butthurt crazies, but you didn't factor in the fact that you had 1,000 people like what you had to say. So just consider that. Take that as a grain of salt when people are angry on the internet, because people are always angry on the internet. They need to take their medicine. So we got marijuana, alcohol. Oh, and alcohol in Arkansas. Excuse me. That's a really big issue, and I did not see. Oh, looky here. Okay, Arkansas voters reject plan for statewide alcohol. That's bad news for Liberty. They were trying to end alcohol prohibition. Many counties in the state of Arkansas are dry counties, and the voters actually rejected a plan to make it legal all across the state in every county to purchase alcohol, which, you know, they ought to – the voters obviously get a right to decide to do what they want to do in their state, but I think that they made the wrong decision on this one, because alcohol prohibition doesn't work. It's actually more dangerous, because people who are in dry counties will drive to go get alcohol in another county, and then they'll have to drive all the way back, you know, so it actually makes it so people who are more likely to drink are more likely to drive. Again, so a lose for Liberty in Arkansas. Now, GMOs. This is a big issue, and I know a lot of my listeners don't agree with me on this, but I got to stay on my ground because I'm very pro-science on this issue. But the GMOs, the anti-GMO initiatives in Oregon and Colorado, it sounds as if the voters in let me read this again. This is from Reason Magazine. Science won in Colorado with voters rejecting the mandatory labeling requirement by 68-32%. The Oregon vote is still too close to call, but the vote was 51% against labeling and 49% in favor. You know the anti-GMO crazies are going to demand a recall there. So we may not know what happens in Oregon until Friday. Reason Magazine writes that both initiatives were egregiously unscientific. Oregon's Measure 92 is dishonest. It misleadingly asserted that the U.S. FDA does not require or conduct safety studies of genetically engineered foods. Instead, any safety consultations are voluntary, and genetically engineered food developers may decide what information to provide to the agency. Market approval of genetically engineered food is based on industry research alone. Of course, this is precisely the way in which new pharmaceuticals are regulated and approved. Companies keep providing information about each new crop variety to the FDA regulators until they have no more questions. In this case, the process is unnecessary. If a trait, like pest resistance or herbicide resistance, is safe in one crop, it's safe in all crops. There should be no need for approval for each new variety. And the Reason Magazine goes on to debunk a lot of the BS when it comes to the anti-GMO initiatives, but it sounds as if the voters were making the right call here. And I know, again, a lot of you don't agree with me on this, and you are definitely anti-GMO, but I'm sorry, ladies and gentlemen, I just cannot take up the cudgel against something that has saved nearly a billion lives. If you don't know Norman Borlaug, B-O-R-L-A-U-G, do me a favor, Google that guy. And there's some great videos online. Penn and Teller talked about him a little bit as well. But you should definitely educate yourselves on these issues. It's not libertarian to demand labeling of foods and ask the government to wipe your little butt for you and tell you what is in your food. That's your responsibility, ladies and gentlemen, not mine, and certainly not the federal government. So back off. All right. So we've hit GMOs, we've hit marijuanas, we've hit alcohol. Oh, what's another issue? You know, I know libertarians are really curious to see how their candidates did. How did the libertarian candidates do? And I think probably the biggest question we have, and the Democrat in Virginia won by 12,000 votes. Mark Warner versus Ed Gillespie. And listen to this. The libertarian candidate in this Robert Sarvis here in, for Senate, he got 54,000 votes. So it's theoretically possible that 12,000 of those votes might have gone to the Republican, Ed Gillespie. And, you know, people are going to say, oh, they're a spoiler. They're a spoiler. And I told John Stossel's producer this morning that I don't really believe in spoilers. The only people who spoil elections are the people who can't win themselves. If you can't win an election, that's your fault. Not somebody else's fault for taking votes away from you. You have to earn votes. And if there's anything that I've learned campaigning and being in part of political campaigns and trying to win elections for libertarian or libertarian-leaning candidates, it's that you win or you lose on your own merits. You really do. I've seen candidates who are pulling ahead, and then they do something stupid, and then they lose it all. If 54,000 votes went to Robert Sarvis, I'll bet you 50,000 of those people don't even know who the hell Robert Sarvis is. They're probably just pulling because they're libertarians or they don't like Ed Gillespie or Mark Warner, but I pretty much guarantee you it wasn't because they didn't like Ed Gillespie. It was probably just because they are libertarians and that's what they want to vote for. So you can't say that you are owed those votes as a Republican. You're not owed those votes as a libertarian. And as a matter of fact, when Robert Sarvis ran for governor here in Virginia before, they found that he took more votes away from Democrats. More votes from Democrats. Libertarians tend to do that. As a matter of fact, I believe in North Carolina, where my good buddy Sean Haw was running as a libertarian, he actually, we found out that the Koch brothers, spent $225,000 trying to get Democrats to vote for Sean Haw. Isn't that interesting? So I think that you have to ask yourself this, you know, when you're looking at elections, you know, it's your philosophy. Do you believe that votes belong to someone? Well, then you probably don't understand how elections work, because people may have just stayed home if they couldn't have voted for a libertarian anyway. Maybe they just wanted a show. Now, listen to this. This is Brian Doherty. He wrote this at 1 a.m. last night. Way to go, Brian. Talking about the exit polls for Sean Haw. And it looks like Libertarian Sean Haw got 3.74%. The Republicans still won. Tom Tillis versus Democrat Kay Hagan. It looks like it was 49-47. Pretty close. But Sean Haw probably didn't really impact it overall. Listen to this. Sean Haw, the overall man-woman breakdown was the same. 4% of each in the exit poll. Haw's numbers got progressively smaller as voter income got bigger. He earned 6% of the under $30,000 a year vote, but only 1% of the over $200,000 vote. Libertarians aren't just for plutocrats. Now, that's very interesting because it shows that the dissatisfaction of the electorate comes from mostly the poor. And it looks like the poor don't want help from government. At least that's what these exit polls seem to be showing. Listen to this. Interestingly, Haw got more votes from people who want to raise the minimum wage than for those who don't. Giving credence to the notion that he represents a libertarianism not that interested in economic liberty issues. He got more votes from those against the wars in Syria and Iraq than those for it, and only slightly more votes from pro-gay marriage types than anti-gay marriage types. 5% on the pro and 4% on the anti. Now, that's very interesting. Now, for Robert Sarvis, this is Brian Doherty writing at Reason, who you can bet will be accused by some of costing Republican Ed Gillespie the Senate election. Sarvis got 2.45% of the vote. Mark Warner got 49 and Gillespie 48.48. Sarvis drew equally from liberals, moderates, and conservatives. According to this poll, he got 3% of each. But when it gets to party identification, he drew statistically nothing from Democrats, 3% from Republicans, and 7% from independents. Independents were otherwise split evenly, 47-47, between Warner and Gillespie. So there is indeed some cause for GOPers to think that Sarvis's presence in the race was bad for them. Okay. In other Sarvis exit polls from NBC, Sarvis did his best among independent men, 7% and best among college graduates with 6%. In terms of family income, he did best among the under 50,000 a year crowd with 4% of those versus just 2% of the 100K or more folk. So very interesting. So these are different results than what he got when he ran for governor. So who is this Sir Robert Sarvis guy? And seems like he's all over the map. And I don't know. You know, I don't think that he necessarily cost a Republican the election. They'll probably accuse him of that. I'm not a Robert Sarvis fan myself, but I do like libertarians being on the ballot. So if you're going to win, win on your own recognizance. Republicans, Democrats, earn your votes. Every vote that you get for yourself is what matters. And what went to the other guy? Well, they pulled the vote for the other guy, and it's not the other guy's fault. It's your own. So What do you think, ladies and gentlemen? Was this overall a good win for Liberty? Did libertarians come out ahead in this election, or are you but hurt and sad? Why don't you send me an email? Go to libertarianrepublic.com. Send us a tip if you've got a news story or something that you think should be covered. I'm Austin Peterson, your host of the Freedom Report. So don't forget to come back, read my websites, thelibertarianrepublic.com, and my sister site, you've probably seen it, libertyviral.com. That's where we have a little bit more fun, maybe a little bit more silliness, but still some good news, important news for libertarians to be reading. And don't forget to come back every day. I'm your home for economic freedom and personal liberty at thelibertarianrepublic.com.